Stoicism as a philosophy sometimes gets a bad rap. For example, that it focuses on the individual at the expense of everything else. And for some of us, it's been a way that people have fobbed off our experiences. Just suck it up and move on. But Stoicism is much more than the stiff upper lip idea. This ancient philosophy could teach us quite a lot about equity and sustainability. What a great topic for right now. I'd love to hear what philosophy you use to guide the choices you make in life, whatever tradition it springs from. Head to our Facebook page, ABC Radio National, and tell us there. Kai Whiting is a lecturer in Stoic philosophy and sustainability, and he's the co-author of Being Better, Stoicism for a World Worth Living In. Kai, welcome to Life Matters.
Thank you very much for having me, Hilary.
It's a pleasure, because I think a lot of us think of Stoicism as just trudging valiantly onwards, whatever life throws at us. And I think self-control is one of the four Stoic virtues. But otherwise, how accurate is that popular understanding of Stoicism?
It's not particularly accurate at all. There is a sense that one should not allow emotions to guide them to the sense that they've actually lost all meaning. I like the fact that this program is called Life Matters, because the Stoics held that life matters. But it's not life per se, it's life with meaning that matters. So we can be emotional, but we should be emotional for the common good. We should use our emotion to help and facilitate justice, not be emotional for emotional sake, which is why you get the little s explanation.
Oh, yes. Well, and justice, you mentioned self-control, but also courage and wisdom. They sound very familiar from other traditions actually around the world too.
Yes, I think that when one seeks a purpose-driven life, they ask themselves, what is good? What is worthwhile? What is the examined life? And I do honestly believe that the virtues are important. And in Stoicism, it's not be brave or be courageous. It's develop the capacity so that you have the character that is always courageous, that is always just, always wise, and always temperate, and therefore always good.
Well, it's interesting too that the aim of Stoicism is to achieve the good life, and Zeno of Citium, who seems to have made it famous, understood that, I think, as more like a flourishing or a well-being or a happiness rather than material riches. But even so, is that achievable to everyone? Won't some people's circumstances make it really hard to achieve the good life?
Zeno would say that it was open to all, that even the wisest person who is being tortured can still flourish, in the sense that they have control of their mind. They have a control of what matters to them. So you materially, yes, life can be difficult, life can be uncomfortable. But Zeno held that there's nothing that would stop you to truly flourish, which is different to, say, Aristotle, that said you had to be male and wealthy and have a great education, which meant that most people, you know, during that period could not flourish according to his definition. Zeno said, no, as long as you have control of your mind and your attitude, the only thing that you truly control, there you can flourish.
Yeah, I think you had to be Athenian too, didn't you? It was a tiny little Venn diagram.
It was indeed, yes.
Is that, do you think, Kai Whiting, why Stoicism has had a bit of an uptick in interest during the pandemic? Because there are lots of things we can't control right now, but we can still control our minds to an extent.
I would absolutely say that's true. It was certainly true in my case, because you think, okay, I can't even go outside now. I can't see my friends. What can I do? What is it that is important to me? What is my meaning in life? Because sometimes, well, you would say yourself that work is very important and that we're very driven as professionals. And COVID took away that comfort, and you had to say, well, who am I? And what does it mean to have a sound mind? What does it mean when everything around me and what I hold to be important is now turned upside down? And so I think for me personally, yes. And I've certainly seen others engage with Stoicism because of the pandemic.
Well, and for you personally too, Kai, I understand that when your grandmother died, that was a real turning point for you in your understanding of how Stoicism could work in your life.
Absolutely. She was very, very, very important to me. She wasn't one of those grandmothers that you kind of tuck away and at Christmas bring her out kind of thing.
Oh.
She was some people see it that way. My grandmother was fundamental to me. She was my mentor. She always said to me, aim high, so if you fall, you fall in the middle. And when we lost her, it was like the oxygen had been sucked out of the room. The thing that had given our family life had gone. And I was like, well, what does this mean? Why did she die? And the answer to why she died was because she was ill. And that wasn't a very significant question. The most important one was, what am I going to do about it? What am I going to do now? And Stoicism helped me through that. Whereas wallowing in sort of my sadness what in my pain would not have done.
I wonder if we could look at the allegation that Stoicism is about the individual. You know, it does sound a bit like you're working on your own moral character and you're working out how you can, you know, attain that capacity to be courageous all the time. Is there a more collective way to understand these four Stoic virtues as well?
Well, I think you're absolutely right that it is main, you know, it is individual, but it's not individualistic. So I focus on myself because I can't control what you do, Hillary, for example. I can't control even what my cat does. So I really only have the ability to control what I think right now. But it's not individualistic because Marcus Aurelius, who's the Roman emperor, he was also a key Stoic. And he said, what cannot be good for the beehive cannot be good for the bee. So the idea that it's only about the bee or only about me means that I'm very much mistaken because my sense of being is linked to other people. It's part of being in this network of humanity and the cosmos, they would argue. So if I think only about myself, if I think that I can survive as a bee, I'll actually die in the very meaningful sense.
So where does Stoicism sit on wealth then, Kai? I mean, there's that biblical idea that it's harder for a rich man to enter heaven than it is for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle. But tell us about Dan Price and how he went through his particular needle.
That's a very good question because people often say, oh, well, Silicon Valley likes Stoicism and Seneca is rich and Marcus Aurelius was rich. So the Stoics say wealth is neither good nor bad. You can be wealthy and happy and wealthy and miserable. It's not going to, the wealth itself per se doesn't change you. What changes your attitude towards wealth. So Dan Price was an excellent example who said, okay, I don't need more than 70,000 to do, you know, to have material comfort. So after that, what I need to do is have meaning and bring meaning to my life and to others. So he said, okay, my responsibility as an entrepreneur is not to make shareholders happy. It's to make my staff happy. Is to make my staff pleased to come here and work and offer an excellent service to the customer. And I thought that was a really Stoic example. He wasn't interested in maximizing wealth. He was interested in working towards other people's well-being. So when I asked him, Dan, would you like a copy of the book? He said, I would like you to give the copy to my head of human resources.
And I thought, and possibly everyone answer. On the board.
So I thought, that's excellent. Like he never was promoting that, but it just came through his values that no, my role as entrepreneur is to build the community that I work with, and I do that for giving them space to be to flourish as individuals. He says, for example, that people started to buy houses and have children, think more about their family, and I think that's a very Stoic influenced perspective way of looking at the world.
Yeah, some of his employees had their income double overnight, which must have been startling and amazing. We're speaking with Kai Whiting, who's the co-author of Being Better, Stoicism for a World Worth Living In, which is a very accessibly written book, I have to say, about a very ancient philosophy about which a lot has already been said, but it kind of puts it squarely into a modern perspective. And Kai, you write about how it can help guide our attitude to our natural environment. Could you expand on that a little bit? Because I'm wondering how whether it just means we have to go live in a cave, frankly.
I think it's a really good question because there is the idea that we should, you know, if to be environmental is to stop flying, for example. That's a very environmentalist, activist expression. And the Stoics will say, well, why are you flying? You know, are you doing it because of your job? Is that something you have to do? And it was kind of strange that the climate scientists were the ones that were flying the most, right? So the Stoics, I found that ironic. So the Stoics say, well, why are you flying? And do you need to fly? Can you develop, say, Zoom and tools such as, so that you don't have to meet in big groups in different continents and fly across the world and tell other people not to do that, right? So the Stoics are saying, like, we have to think about our role. We have to think about if we're the bee and the beehive, what is the role that we have right now? It's not about telling other people what to do, right? But it's looking at ourselves and saying, well, where am I being incoherent? And for example, I found the climate scientists were very incoherent. In my case, I thought, okay, I can't, you know, preach that we shouldn't drive and burn fossil fuels and then have a car. So I don't have a car. So the Stoics say, okay, do you need, for example, Kai, do you need a car? I'd be like, well, no, I don't actually have to have a car because I've put, you know, choices in my life where I can actually use public transport. But if I were living in the US, there wouldn't be an option, right? Or in Australia, that wouldn't be the option because the country is so large. So the Stoics say, what can you do now? What is appropriate now? And that might change, Hillary. For example, you might say, well, right now I don't need a car, but if tomorrow my job changes and I have to relocate, I have to make a different decision. Okay, now I need a car. What car is appropriate? So environmentalists tend to have a black and white kind of, you're always wrong if you do this and you're always right if you do that. And the Stoics will say, no, it really depends on who you are. It depends on what your role is in society. And yes, you must always look at your agency and maximize it. So it's not like, well, I can't do anything. I can't drive because that would be bad. It's not a very Stoic perspective on anything.
Mm. I think it probably depends on your environmentalist too, how black and white they are, as it does on the other side of the coin. But Kai, if a Stoic does the right thing in a forest and doesn't Instagram it, does that count? Do you have to be, you know, seen to be upholding those virtues of justice and wisdom and courage and self-control?
That's a fantastically very witty question.
Thank you.
The Stoics actually were against you having to promote it to everybody. So, for example, although I was criticizing the environmental activists, I find that the need to tell other people what they're doing and other people what they should do, I find that quite difficult. Because I prefer to be, you know, we should be quiet about it, but doing good work. And the Stoics were the same. Like, if you need to shout about it, there's no virtue in that. You're not actually being courageous at all. You're just showing me, well, look how brave I am because it makes me look good. And then they say, well, you've missed the mark. You've not understood why you're doing it. You're doing it for show. You're doing it to create a reaction. And there's no stoicism in that.
This is really interesting. So we're discovering that Stoics are flexible in the face of changing circumstances. They are against virtue signaling, which is nice in the modern world. They're morally upright. Are they fun to be around?
Some of them are. I think it depends on who you spend time with. I think some people are certainly funnier than I am, and I guess I'm funnier than others. Stoicism isn't about once you become Stoic, you should have a certain character trait. The only one that you really work towards is, okay, I need to be virtuous. But it's not about being like unemotional or I'm going to be very, you know, strict about something. Some people are strict, and the Stoics would say, if you have a strict character, then that's you. You shouldn't try to change yourself to the point that you're trying to impress somebody. You should always be pro-social, always look to, you know, build a conversation rather than go against it, which is part of what you've done today, part of your job, right? You're always looking to do the research to engage me and therefore engage your audience. And that's exactly what the Stoics would say. It's about engaging with society. It's about being part of society, not rejecting it, not removing yourself from it, but not being over the top and excessively virtuous, you know, signaling your virtue.
Oh, yeah. We're all about the beehive here at Radio National. Kai Whiting, it has been so fascinating to read a bit more about Stoicism and to talk to you today. Thanks so much for joining us late at night, your time. Really appreciate the chat.
Thank you very much.
Kai Whiting, the co-author of Being Better, Stoicism for a World Worth Living In. And I love that quote. It can't be good for the bee if it's not good for the beehive. You're listening to Life Matters, and our next guests bring stories to people in Indigenous communities, big and small people. Michael McKenzie will find out how this is helping lift literacy levels. You're listening to Radio National.